is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Harvey Adelson. Let's talk about him for a little bit. The silent father with ties that won't go away. Harvey's never taken the stand in the trial of anyone as of yet. And compared to Donna and Charlie, he's been almost kind of a shadowy figure. But the details that come out in this trial drag him a little bit closer to the center of the plot than he's ever been before. Between the phone records, coded texts, and his alleged attempt to leave the country, the question is no longer whether Harvey benefited from Dan's death. It's whether he actively knew about it and had anything to do with it. Joining me to discuss, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Let's dig into the signals that are kind of pointing his way a bit in this. Let's start with the hitman phone call. Harvey's phone showed up in communications with Sigfrido Garcia just weeks before the murder. Not a casual connection. How could investigators evaluate whether this was accidental or a direct link tying Harvey into this whole murder chain, Jen?
Well, I think one particular item will never stand on its own. But when you start adding up the items of circumstantial evidence against Harvey, that conversation at Dolce Vita, the fact that I would call this a clear sort of accessory after that crime, trying to leave the country and on a one-way ticket to Vietnam. All of that and the conversations and different text messages, it really starts to shine that he was involved.
It really is starting to feel that way. I got a lot of questions about the specifics, but let me just get your visceral reaction to what we've seen in the courtroom. He's been sitting there every single day, kind of by himself, looking a little Elmer Fuddy Stundish, I would say, every single day. What's been your take on Harvey in the courtroom watching all this unfold?
Well, I think he's worried. I mean, he's a smart man. This was a multimillionaire dentist. He not only was a good dentist, apparently, but he was a good businessman. And so he's no dummy. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy that's just back there sort of being led by, you know, a nose ring. This guy, I think, is smart, and he's seeing what the prosecution did, how the prosecution started with the low-hanging fruit, work to Magnabaugh, and sorry if I'm saying her name wrong, Catherine, and then
McDonough,
and then moved from there on to Donna, obviously Charlie first, mm-hmm. and he sees what the prosecution is doing, and with each trial, you see sort of the spattering of who they're going after next, and I see that spattering with both Harvey and Wendy in this trial.
Was he smart enough to keep out of it, though? Was he smart enough to just keep his nose and his business acumen and keep the money coming in and keep the family alive? Or do you think Harvey was part of the larger conversation here that likely was going on between Donna and Charlie and about getting rid of Dan Markell? And God knows if anybody else was in on those conversations. Or did he keep his nose clean? I think that's the big question.
Well, I think he knew. Look, they mm-hmm. were married forever. I think he knew, not just based on that, but based on the other indicators. That Dolce Vita film, I think, is bad for him, even though the sound is terrible, which often happens. But I think you look at that. But do I think they have enough to prove beyond a reasonable doubt? I don't know without anybody else testifying against him for the murder conspiracy, but what about the accessory after the fact?
Yeah.
That's where those types of actions that he took to go to Vietnam, it just shows such a consciousness of guilt. I could see them charging and then playing him down.
The Dolce Vita film is a tough one. It is insanely hard to understand. I think a lot of people's eyes glaze over when it's played because it's like, what is this? But I know you've paid greater attention to it. What about it? I mean, for those out there who haven't paid attention to that piece, what is so damning about it for Harvey?
Well, the damning part is that's what they're discussing. Mm-hmm. They're discussing all of this issues in the crime. And why would you discuss that? Now, on the flip side of that, remember, there are other discussions where I believe it's Donna that says, hey, let's not talk about it, you know, basically when Harvey's here. So mm-hmm. that's something that a defense for Harvey would be taking a look at, that sort of the juxtaposition between the conversation with Charlie and juxtaposing that with, hey, listen, they wanted to keep him out of it. Look, I think he's on the cusp. Do I think that would be a great case against him? No way. This is not a great case against him, but for a lesser charge.
It's interesting just to think about what could possibly happen there. This is a family that enjoyed communicating in code, or at least so they thought. They weren't the greatest at it. Donna texted Charlie about getting that birthday present for Harvey. Could be taken both ways, I guess. Prosecutors say it was code for murder. You know, from an FBI perspective, how do you prove a coded message is exactly that? And what does it say about Harvey if this gift is meant for him?
Well, I think the interesting thing is Harvey can't decide what gift is for him, right?
He's yeah.
involved in that conversation per se. But we love it as an FBI agent. I love it when people start saying, you know, the cake, meaning, or wow, you know, hey, let's go on a roller coaster today. Or how about there? It's time for a big screen TV. And they just do it over and over and over again to refer to the criminal activity. We kind of salivate because we know juries love that. They see mm-hmm. through it. And we all see through it. And they somehow think that that's going to protect him. I guess it is better than saying, you know, hey, how did that murder hit go? better to say, maybe, but we all see through it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, the night that the visit that they went to Charlie's, Harvey and Donna, straight to Charlie's house, the evening of the murder together. Does that look like a grieving family rallying together, or more like co-conspirators, you know, checking in after the plan succeeded?
Well, of course, with all we know now, co-conspirators. And then you add on top of that, those conversations with Rob. Rob, again, is the other son, mm-hmm. good son, if you will. And sort of how they kept him in the dark and even hung up on him, you know. And his point was, and I think it's the point we all took, these people were not acting like you would normally act if the father of your grandchildren was just literally shot in the back of the head in his car. I mean, you would be worried about your daughter. You'd be worried about your family. You'd be wanting to understand why this happened. And they're just kind of like, yeah, it looks like he's dead. We're going to go up and check it out. Bye.
Yeah. Very, very passive on something. You'd think you'd be wondering, are we next? Is somebody mad at the whole group? But if you already know the answer to that, well, then your reaction is not going to quite be there. What are they? Do you think that they are looking for something, that they're going to try and get something out of someone in this trial in terms of testimony that they can use as another piece in the puzzle against Harvey, that they're just waiting to get? Do they have enough to go after Harvey, and maybe they'll get something? Where do you think they're sitting here on him?
You know, I think their hope is, from a prosecution standpoint, I would be salivating if Donna decided to take the stand. Mm-hmm. And again, when you look at her counsel, who, to me, if she's convicted, they're going to have Sixth Amendment issues all over the place, possibly for a successful appeal, because her counsel seems quite inept on several different levels and not just her wardrobe. And so you wonder if Donna's going to be able to convince her in her la-la land that we know she's in. I mean, she wrote the script for in the jailhouse to say, right, she's in complete Hollywood land. Does she think she can maybe take that stand and convince those jurors that, listen, everybody's got it all wrong, and this is really what this meant and what this meant, and Gibbers was really a nice thing for me to call my son-in-law. I think a lot of people like this, like an Alec Murdaugh, really think that they can talk anybody into anything. And quite frankly, she's got a good track record. She's been able to talk Charlie, who definitely was a dentist. I believe he was a periodontist, you know, very successful, into coordinating a murder.
Yeah.
So he's her whole life, she's been successful at control. And I think maybe she might take that stand just saying, see, I can even control a jury, but we'll see.
She has control. She has a lot of control still, but the control that she has is over the future of Harvey and over Wendy. I mean, at the end of the day, she can take that stand and incriminate the hell out of them if she wants to. I mean, and I'm wondering if that's maybe what kept Wendy forgetting things so often when she was on the stand. Because I want to talk about Wendy Adelson here as well and what the future may hold for her. She seemed to not have a great memory this round of the trial. But I think at the other end of the day, she knows that she hasn't talked to her mom in a couple years. And if mom takes the stand, mom's pretty much in control if you're going to be in prison or not, depending on what she wants to reveal. How much or how strong are these strings that Donna still has over Wendy?
Well, Donna's strings are, I mean, this is fishing line. This is strong strings, because Donna, with just her testifying, she could absolutely get Wendy prosecuted. Mic drop, same against Harvey. And that, of course, is what the prosecution's dream situation would be. Do I think she's going to do it? I don't know. I mean, if she's convicted and is going to have to serve the rest of her life, may she flip? I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't be surprised if she did it. But you asked me about her control. She has complete control over Wendy and Harvey at this point.
And ultimately, if she's the martyr and the, you know, the woman that she wants everybody to think she is, she would just go away quietly and take it for the team and it happened. But I don't know that she's going to do it. I feel like she might just want to, you know, sink everybody on the Titanic with her and bring her down, because that's the way it goes. And that's just kind of how she thinks. Wendy's own boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend, obviously testified that she said Charlie had looked into hiring a hitman. He was right there for some of those discussions on the stand. She denied involvement, but admitted that she loathed her ex. And she's also been careful to distance herself, often saying she didn't recall the very details prosecutors were pressing. So there's a lot that is on the table for Wendy and that ex-boyfriend testifying, admitting that that Charlie had explored that hitman moment, the possibility. If true, how does law enforcement judge whether a statement like that is a credible foreknowledge or just idle venting? Because that would have taken place prior to the hit.
Yeah, I think law enforcement would absolutely use that as another piece in the evidentiary pyramid that they would be building. But again, you know, they really need Donna to make the case against Harvey. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they need Donna to make the case against Wendy. It's not the strongest case, but they've got a case there. And when you look at the totality of this conspiracy, Tony, I think they could get a conviction before a jury.
Do you see them going after Wendy or Charlie after this, or one or the other? Is it one more at a time, or are they done once it very much looks like Donna will be going down?
Right, Wendy or Harvey? I think that if Donna is convicted, I think they will go after Wendy.
Yeah. How soon? Do you think it's like, Wendy, you better have your bags packed and ready? Or do you think it's going to be it might be a surprise one morning for Wendy?
Well, we call this, you know, tickling the wire, if you will. Mm-hmm. They will want to see what the responses are from everybody. You never know what phones they're listening to. Mm-hmm. You never know what informants that they might be wheedling into Wendy's world and Harvey's world. We don't know. But I can tell you, from being on that side, I would be using every investigative tool I had right now to finish and close out this case. So they're going to wait a little while. It's not going to be overnight. Mm-hmm. And they're going to just see if the tickling, if she's convicted of Donna, gets them any more evidence.
Do you think they've been actively investigating Wendy over the last, continuing into today until if they actually do charge her. Do you think that they've been listening to her phone calls? Do you think they've been monitoring her communications, waiting for something for her to slip up, to say something to somebody that is damning enough to finally go after her with?
Well, the question is, do they really have the probable cause that they need necessary to listen to her? Why, you know, to do a Title III intercept? That I don't know, but I can tell you that that's what they would want to be doing. In other words, they'd be looking at her phone call records. I truly believe that on what we call like a pen register situation, or just monitoring them as they occur in the past and getting her records. I think they're actively definitely still investigating her. I think she's on their list of subjects because, like all of us, I think we see really who was, you know, was she 100% behind this or was she just one of the people behind it? I think she was one of the people behind it for sure.
The fact that, I mean, she doesn't recall so many things, and this would have been like, you know, one of, if not the most, you know, traumatic moments in your life. Yeah, people do block that stuff off. You've had plenty of time to contemplate this. It's one thing not to remember something. It's another, you know, to truly not recall it on the stand. It's another to truly not remember it. When it comes down to actually having memory and being able to prove that you have memory of it, because you've talked about it, you've sent emails about it, you've done this, you've done that. There's a lot of things that on that stand she just can't recall, and that's a great buffer for her. It provides her, you know, the strategy to avoid perjury. But at the same point, there obviously is a lot more that she did, in fact, have knowledge to. Exactly what? That's the piece that's up for question. If they were to go in at Wendy after all of this, is it still an investigative moment? Do they go and question her again at some point? Or at this point, is it, if we're going after Wendy, guns are blazing? Not that they're going to, you know, shoot her, but they're going to go in and they're going to make the arrest and it's not going to be, you know, pretty.
I think they would still take a run at interviewing her.
Yeah.
Obviously, she has counsel, I believe. And so they have to go through that. You know, only in the movies do you get to sort of evade counsel and just start asking questions. Mm-hmm. In reality, you could not question her. So to your question, guns a-blazing, meaning would they just go pick her up? I think that that is what would happen. And listen, what liquor store was she really looking for over by Charlie's? Come on. It's so obvious, but the prosecution is doing a great job building everything up. And I think, you know, maybe they're hoping Donna takes that stand and says something she regrets, or that she decides, I'm tired of, I'm going down, you're going down too.
Was there anything in the testimony this round from Wendy's ex-boyfriend who came on this stand? I found him to be very fascinating. I went back and even watched his police deposition from way back. And he reveals so many interesting tidbits about the Adelsons and their dynamic and the enmeshment and just how much of an adult child Wendy is, and how they treated her. Was there anything this round of what he revealed that is different from the previous trials, or anything that paints Wendy in a more damning light than we've seen in the past?
I mean, Wendy is painted in such a damning light before, during, and after, right? Yeah. She's smart. She was a professor, a law professor herself. She was very well educated, Tony. She does not buffalo, I don't think, most women who realize she's manipulative and conniving, and she's the one that benefited the most from this entire crime. So Jeff does a good job, though, I think, of painting what a princess she was, but it doesn't mitigate that she's a smart woman, and it doesn't mitigate all that information that I think is attributable to her being part of the conspiracy.
It's going to be fascinating to see what happens to Wendy Adelson. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube, if that's where you are. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts as well, so you don't miss any of the coverage on this and the many cases we're following for you right here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. Jennifer Coffendaffer, as always, thank you for your insight into this and our many stories.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.